Blog Talk Radio.
To the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Previously, Dr. Carroll was Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having any problems breaking through that next level of athletes, if you're having problems in life, please don't take it out on anybody else. Sit down and have a few minutes with Dr. Carroll or a professional. If you'd like to reach her, you can reach her at area code 813-689-2466. And her offices are located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. As you can hear in the background, the Phillies are playing, and they just have another home run. Brady and Sharon are now celebrating. We want to send our very best wishes out to the Tampa Bay Lightning for another win over the Jersey Devils today. It brings them up 2-0 for the series, and it was a terrific game. We had a chance to be there and broadcast live from there. So we want to thank Mr. Phil Esposito, Mr. Dave Anderchuk, Captain Dave, and all the guys at the Lightning. So, Ty, it was a very interesting week this week.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, Butch, how you been
doing,
sir?
Good,
good to talk to you. Yeah,
yep.
Great to be back. Great to miss you guys.
Yeah. Hey, before we get into tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to ask you to do something. Just keep a good thought for a good friend of ours who is going to go to Cleveland Clinic for a possible evaluation and diagnosis and hopefully get some problems straightened out. So if in your time, your day, and you have a chance, a small prayer or a good thought would be great. I'm sure their family would appreciate it. So, okay, let's get into the meat of this stuff. Mr. Edner Cherry won last night the decisive win in the 10th round. Came on strong, although he promised he was going to knock the guy out, but I guess Dan told him not to.
Well, you know, it was good for Edner to get, you know, back on a winning track. He hasn't lost since he had that controversial split decision loss to Jose Pedraza for the lightweight title in 2015. So it's interesting to see where Al Heyman's going to take Edner next. Since that fight, he's beaten a contender in Omar Douglas, a very close fight. But with that said, you know, I like to see Edner start to get another opportunity. This was more of a stay busy fight. This wasn't necessarily, you know, an eliminator or something of that nature that's going to move Edner forward. It was more of a parallel type of move in regards to his career. So, you know, Edner's getting a little up there. You know, he's not as young as he used to be. So I like to see the pieces in place for him to have a final run. So I hope his management is doing so.
Yeah, we certainly wish that for him. You know, he does have a child with cerebral palsy. His wife has been ill an awful lot. She's had heart surgery. She's had shoulder surgery, and she just had some surgery on her neck. So and all through this, he maintains a bright outlook on life. He works every day and then goes to drives 100 miles each way to the gym to work out. So, you know, we hold him in very high regard. And now that he's got another win under his belt, I think we're finally going to get together for this is going to be a big summer for us. We're going to get together for him and the family coming down here for a cookout. And we're going to get together with the rest of our staff the week of July 21st in Philadelphia. We're coming up, and we want to, again, thank Mr. Brady Quinn, a member of our staff who has chosen that he's the first-string All-American on
Wow.
Yep, on Pop Warner, which means that he'll be able to scarf up some cash for his college. And it's a really nice kid, good kid, very studious. So we want to bring that up. And today is the 11th birthday of his younger brother, Mr. Caden J. Carroll. So
happy
we want to wish
Caden
a very happy birthday. And he's sitting in the other room with his Phillies cap on too. So I guess it's not hard to tell what my family's into. That's hey, Adrian Broner and Jesse Vargas on the 21st. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I honestly lean towards Jesse Vargas. He's the more consistent fighter. And even if Adrian Broner shows up in top form, Jesse Vargas's length, specifically in his jab, could give Adrian Broner some trouble. Adrian Broner's not one who moves his feet quite as actively as he may need to, and he doesn't actually throw as many punches as he may need to have the output to beat a Jesse Vargas. So that's kind of how I see that fight going. That whole card is a fantastic card because we have Jamal Charlo at 160 fighting, I believe it's Hugo Centeno, as well as Tank Davis, that card, fighting, oh, God, who's he fighting? I know he's fighting, whoever he's fighting's only got two losses, and I've seen the guy fight several times. It's a pretty tough fighter. He actually just lost his title recently. So that's a good – it's a great card, triple header. Obviously, like you said, Jesse Vargas versus Adrian Broner at the top of the bill, in which case, like I said, I lean towards Jesse being a more consistent fighter.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to agree with that. Adrian finally says he's ready to take his career seriously. You know, we've heard that before, and I sort of doubt that it's going to happen, but I wish him all the best. But I think Jesse Vargas is going to take it to him. But they've also changed the Charlo's opponent now. It's going to be Austin Trout.
Oh, that's his brother. His brother's defending his 154-pound title against
Jamel.
Austin Trout.
Yeah,
the twin brother. So it's easy to get that confused, right? That's going to happen. I'm going back to Adrian Broner. You know, it's funny that you know, we constantly hear him going back and saying he's going to take his career seriously. And you know what? This could, you know, you never know when a switch is going to flip in someone and they do something different, right? Because all it takes to change is to actually get up and change. So I think the fact of the matter, what kind of gets lost is even if he takes his career seriously, even if he gets completely dedicated, him still as a boxer has certain limitations that prevent him from winning at the elite level at certain times. You know, as a boxer, although he has great fundamentals, he has good speed, good power, you know, he's sort of a tweener, kind of between the welterweight and 140-pound division to make 140 really kind of taxes him, but he's not quite big enough for 147. Also, he's a guy who doesn't fight on his toes. He's kind of flat-footed, and so therefore he likes to fight in the pocket. So he's, you know, kind of limited in what he does in the ring, although he does it very, very well. So I think what happens is because of all the distractions outside the ring, we don't give a proper analysis of the fighter himself. And Adrian Broner, as a fighter, even on his best day, is still somewhat limited in what he brings to the ring.
Mm-hmm. Z, you want to chime in on this? You're our Jackson, man.
Absolutely. I just want to welcome you guys, welcome myself. Absolutely. Adrian Broner is... He was a puzzle until he wasn't. He's a guy who, I don't want to use the term wasted talent, rather than he limits himself. How old is Adrian Broner?
I think he's 27 maybe now. Maybe 28.
He's 27 now. Yeah.
Maybe a little
means
older.
Which means he's into the prime. He's more or less into the prime. Adrian Broner's not a heavyweight, so he's not going to go 35 years old, especially with his style, as Ty was mentioning. He's not going to go to 35 years old effective like this. The distractions outside of the ring make him the fighter who he is inside of the ring, so that is the complete package of Adrian Broner, unfortunately. We find many instances of that throughout athletics. People talk about Manigault, John Manigault, one of the greatest basketball players ever, who never made it to the NBA level due to outside of the court influences. Adrian Broner has made it to certain places, but he's not exceeding what he really can be because of not outside influences as much as his mentality to let that seep through and affect his career. Adrian Broner's a guy who he has very, very good reflexes. He can be a very good defensive fighter off of that. Can be a very good counterpuncher off of that. Adrian Broner, if he worked hard enough, could increase his athleticism so his feet can move a little bit more, where he could spin to the side, step back. He does that in stretches, but on a consistent basis, he's flat-footed. He's straight up. He uses a shoulder roll defense, which for the most part, he's rolling a shoulder behind a high chin. What sense does that make?
Zero.
I mean, it's certain aspects of the game that he could be learning, but that he's using what he has now to try to go overboard. So I mean, the guy's not a puzzle. He's not doing the right things with what he has and what he can have. Of anything, what he can have. He has so much potential. And people with potential aren't always people who make it. Potential is exactly what it is, potential. You can have, but you have to go a certain route. You have to work a certain way to make that potential into effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even when Floyd became not the fastest guy, he never was the hardest hitting guy, but not the fastest guy. He still, you know, used his acute boxing sense to win fights against major opponents. Adrian Broner can't do that against decent opponents because he hasn't learned the acute boxing thing. All he knows is his physicality, what he can do, and his reactiveness. Oh, I hit hard because I'm strong. I'm kind of quick. I can react pretty good, but if I shoulder roll with a high guard against some or a high chin against somebody of elite level, well, then I'm going to get hit in the face. That's the whole process of boxing. You have to learn things. So he's not taking what's there and learning. I like the guy because he's an exciting fighter, but
mm-hmm.
I don't like the guy because he could be doing so much more with what he has. And he has the opportunity that so many others don't have. And to be doing that is an injustice to the sport to me.
Mm-hmm. Good. Hey, guys, we're joined by a Philadelphia fanatic. He's a sports fanatic. We met him at the Phillies game this year. He's well aware of the fight game in Philadelphia and down here in Florida. So, Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey. Good night.
How you doing?
Hey.
I'm doing good. I cannot complain. It's been a great few weeks since Florida.
Uh-huh. We were just talking about I'm sitting here with your friend Brady and Caden, and they were just had just talked about having a chance to meet you after the Phillies game.
We had a lot of fun that night, and it's always good to meet different people at the games. I went from 80-degree weather down in Florida, and then a week later I'm at the home opener and it's 45 degrees. but I keep the uniform intact, and I still go with the tank top, the shorts, the Apollo Creed-looking cape, and the hat.
There you go.
You know, we actually one of my friends had just called me a little bit ago, and last year when we were working together, it was a home opener, it was going to be 38 degrees. He said, what are you going to wear? I said, I'm going to wear my outfit, tank top, shorts, cape, hat. You know, he goes, well, what about thermals? So my outfit doesn't wear sleeves. It was only 38
yeah.
degrees. I said, I got Jack Daniels. I'll be good to go.
Wow.
But on the boxing scene, and Frank, you don't even know this, because this was just coming together when I was down in Florida, but right after I got back, and I don't know how my job is tolerating me right now because I took 7 days off in a 15-day span, a couple of days to be in Florida, and then as soon as I got back, I worked 2 days, and then I took 2 days off to be on the set of Creed 2.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Yeah. I know the casting company. Yeah, and I was in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand and an arena in the Ukraine, both in the same day, both located in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Nice.
Yeah, but I was down there. I sat front row, quote unquote, in Vegas as a VIP guest, and I was in the corner behind the one opponent being played by Andre Ward. So I got
nice.
To see how Andre really took the lead in the fight scenes, being the a top class fighter that he is, and how he really helped lead Michael B. Jordan through them and come up with ideas on the choreography of the fight scene. and they would tell you what to do, which for me, I've only ever really been on the set of one or two movies before and never that long. And, you know, I got to watch them work together, how they went over things, how they would do things from different angles, different ideas. The referee there was Robert Byrd. Sometimes his name is thrown in controversy because of his wife's scoring.
Yeah. Adelaide Byrd.
But like I said, he refereed the one fight scene, which was pretty cool. And, you know, I got to see Andre Ward up close. I got a head nod from Roy Jones, who was working as one of the commentators. And then right after the Vegas fight scene, which took a day and a half, they did a half day for a scene in the Ukraine with the son of Ivan Drago.
Nice.
The guy playing him, Florian Mutio, I believe his name is an absolute monster. I mean, look him up on Google. He is a scary-looking dude. And Dolph Lundgren is still a scary-looking monster of a dude. And speaking of Philadelphia, did you guys hear the exciting news out of Philadelphia just a few days ago?
Which news?
The what was known as Glenwood Avenue or Glenwood Drive is now Smokin' Joe Frazier Boulevard.
Yes, I did hear that. Yes, I did hear that.
Yeah.
There we go.
I did not get to go to the dedication because I don't think my bosses wanted me to take any more days off in a row, but I got to, you know, watch some of it online, and it was, you know, pretty awesome. You know, it's a shame that, you know, Joe was getting all these great accolades after his passing, and he didn't get to enjoy them while he was still alive.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Tony, can you speak to how the fighter's demeanor outside of the ring or on the set and everything? I don't think people understand enough of that.
Well, you know what? That's a great point. I have met probably some of the nicest athletes in the world in the fight game. And, you know, because, you know, in the fight game, it's a sport where it's, you know, you got to do it on your own. And, you know, if you can't, you know, you ain't going to last very long. And a lot of these guys have got to be humble individuals. You're going to, you know, get a lot of your fighters out there that, you know, play that persona, your Adrian Broners, you know, guys like that, that really do get into a lot of trouble. But for the most part, you meet guys inside of the ring. Like I said, I've had the opportunity to interview a lot of guys, big name guys, Ray Mercer, Roy Jones, Vinny Pazienza. I've met guys like Larry Holmes a couple times, and you really do have outside. It's almost like you turn that switch off. I used to say about myself, when the hands got taped, the switch turned on, and it was like it's go time. And you'd have to actually set your mind into a dark place because, hey, being a nice guy, being a compassionate guy, being a fun-loving guy, meeting people, joking with people, I got to go out there and take someone that I may personally like and try to separate them from their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, you become, when it's over and that final bell rings, you know, you become that same compassionate individual again. And you're meeting, you know, kids. I've been to fights down in Philadelphia, and that I had, you know, known some of the fighters on the card that they've come out of the ring, and I was sitting next to a couple kids one time. First fight they ever went through, they were 8 and 9 years old. And the one fighter was the fight in the main event. He got out of the ring, and I waved him over. And he came over and he met these kids that were like, oh, my God, we just watched this guy fight a 10-round war, and he's talking to us like, hey, guys, enjoy the fight. You have a good time. And I think that's the mentality of that. Watching Andre Ward down there, I mean, just a true professional and a class act, and just a complete class act. You know, Roy Jones, who was the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world for a good number of years, you know, and he took a lot of criticism during his career because, you know, he came off as cocky and arrogant and all that. But when you talk to him, not at all. You know, just a complete gentleman. Another guy that I've been on conference calls with, this might shock you. I've been on conference calls, you know, as a member of the media with Floyd Money Mayweather earlier in his career, a few years ago.
Oh. Can I spit something on that? I'm actually from Las Vegas. It's
okay.
Pastor Don Jr., CEO.
I didn't get a chance to ask Floyd any questions. I was on conference calls before his fights with Pacquiao and a few years prior before he fought oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on his name, too. Marquez.
Conor McGregor. Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before the Marquez fight in 2009, you know, he gets on the conference call, and, you know, I'm a member of the media, and one of the first things he said, you know, there, Floyd, hey, Floyd, you've been retired for a year and a half now, and you're coming back. How do you feel? How does your body feel? So on and so forth. And the first words that came out of his mouth was, he goes, before I start on my call, I want to pay tribute to three fighters that we just recently lost. And he made mentions of Vernon Forrest, who was tragically killed in a botched robbery. Alexis Arguello was a suicide. And his former opponent, Arturo Gatti. He called them all out by name. And he poignantly paid a tribute to all three of them. And it was, you know, it really hit home with me because I was like, you know what? He is a guy that Floyd knows how to make money. But let's be honest. That's why he gets money Mayweather. And Floyd knows, it's like, you know what? Okay, I know that I relish playing the role of the villain. And what sells is good versus bad. Pro wrestling is always sold on the concept of the good guy versus the bad guy. And Floyd will turn around and say, hey, if I got to play the bad guy in a lot of these to help sell more tickets, people want to see me get whipped. Mm-hmm. Fine, I'll do that if it helps make money. And but then on the other side, he goes to fight Conor McGregor. And then I think, in my personal opinion, Floyd took the role of the good guy going into that one. You know, the cocky, arrogant fighter is trying to take over our world, and I'm the guy that's defending the, you know, the integrity of the sport. I am standing up for all of you, and that's the way. He helped sell that.
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah.
Conor right now is looking a little crazy.
He is the heel of all heels right
now. Yeah. As far as fighters go, who would you say is the most, I would say, the most lively person you've talked to? As far as the interesting, who would you want to always talk to as far as fighters, as even boxing knowledge, entertainment?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you a fighter that I had become very good friends with, and I still will talk to from time to time, which for me was like I went from being starstruck to like it's like my buddy now is Vinny Pazian, Pazmanian Devil. Vinny. Yeah, he was my idol growing up. I mean, I was a Vinny Paz fan like you wouldn't believe, you know. I remember when he broke his neck in the car accident. I was around 14 or 15, right? And I remember watching the fight against Gilbert Delay when he won the junior middleweight title because I started becoming a Vinny fan because in the mid-'80s, the two boxers really hooked me. I watched a lot of it with my dad when I was a kid in the late 70s, early 80s. And then I kind of got away from it for a while. You know, I wasn't watching as much of the fights with them. And the guys that brought me back into it were a young Mike Tyson, because my dad was watching him and, like, taping his fights on VHS. And I would go sneak the tapes down to watch him. I'm like, it's almost like watching dad's, like, dirty videos. But, no, I was sneaking and watching my dad's Mike Tyson videos. And then Vinny Pazienza, who was fighting a lot on the afternoon, like, CBS cards. And I liked, you know, the fact that he was imitating the Looney Tunes character, and I thought that was cool. And I just like how flashy he was. So I remember the fight with Gilbert Delay, and he won the title. And then 3 weeks later, he's like, oh, my God, he broke his neck. He may never walk again. He's never going to fight again. And then I remember hearing, like, no, he's going to fight again. And a year later, he's fighting on USA Tuesday Night Fights. And I'm like, I was afraid to watch the first round because, you know, I was, you know, I didn't want to see him get handicapped. Next thing you know, he's beating the tar out of this guy. 6 months later, I'm at a fight in Atlantic City, and he's fighting Lloyd Hunt again. And I'm like, a year and a half ago, this guy was nearly paralyzed, and I'm watching him fight live. And after he was getting ready to retire, his career was winding down, I was getting a puppy. You know, I hadn't had a puppy in a couple of years. I was getting a puppy. And we're like, what are you going to name him? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I think of a good name. And I'm online looking at the previous litter of these. They were golden retrievers. Previous litter of puppies. And they were these little cute little guys, little pudgy, had their tails in the air. And I said, they look like a bunch of little devils. Little devils. Name them Vinny. And I did. And so I met Vinny at a fight card one time, and I pulled him aside, and I shook his hand, and he's, you know, talking to me a little bit, and I told him how I named my dog. You see his eyes light up. So he took my number. I'm like, this guy's never going to call me. He did a week later, and he did a podcast with me, and he had us cracking up, you know, just cracking up, and I kept his number. So a year later, his book came out, and I'm like, I want to get my dad something good for Christmas, but I don't know how to order this. I never really did Amazon before. So I just called the man up. Hey, Tone, how you doing, man? What's going on? How's life going? I'm like, oh, my God. It's like he's like talking to me like I'm his buddy, right? And I asked him about the book. He goes, well, can you order it from Amazon? And I'm like, sure. Totally BSing him. Yeah, absolutely. He goes, here's my home address. When you order it, you ship it to me. And he goes, and I will sign it for your dad and ship it back to you. And lo and behold, a week before Christmas, here it came. And my dad opened it up. It was face down. And he goes, oh, look. Oh, my God. Would you buy this book for yourself and re-gift it? I said, flip it over. He said, is this book signed? I said, no. It's personalized to you. How did you pull that off? I said, you don't worry about it. But when my dog Vinny died 2 years ago, I got a personal condolence message from the Tasmanian Devil.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey guys, you know, we're joined by another guy that is well-versed in fights in all levels, Dr. Chris Panarella. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Okay. I'm also a dog expert.
Well, there you go.
I love dogs. I could talk about dogs all night. But good to hear you guys talking like that. I do a lot of fighters over the years. I personally train with them, and I enjoy their company. In my lifetime, there's only one or two guys I didn't like and couldn't develop a feeling for. They were just no good. But that's few, one out of a thousand. Most of the fighters I really liked. Was in gyms all my life, and I ran the programs. I was always the doctor at all the Philly amateur fights. I used to save them a fortune because I didn't try. I took all the blood pressure, did all that. I met a million people. There's only one or two that I didn't like, and needlessly, I won't mention their name. I shouldn't mention their name. But you know what? I mean, there's a different personality in the ring and when you step out. You know? They all live normal lives. They're brought up by mothers and fathers and whatnot. And they're not, because they're mean and nasty in the ring, that's because they're trying to accomplish something. They're trying to get some recognition in this world for as long as they're here. And they're not really, you know, they're there to win and be nasty. But they're not, when you get them out of the ring, they're nice guys in the world, you know?
I agree.
And so it's a good conversation. And you would look at Tex Cobb and you would think, holy Christ, this guy's mean-looking, crazy-looking, you know? But when you get to know him, you really enjoy his company and like him. I mean, he's a very likable guy. He's hard not to like. Larry Holmes likes Tex very much. Christ, if I didn't drive Tex up to Larry's testimonials, he'd freak out on me. You got to bring him up there. You can't, you know, it won't be a show without Tex there. You know, we let him be the MC. He was the MC, and what a buster he is. Oh, man. Don't give him a microphone. He'll send you running for cover. But Larry enjoyed him. They like each other. You know, there's only one or two that I've never liked. You know.
I'll tell you a funny thing about Tex Cobb. I met Tex at a fight card about 10 years ago. I took my dad to the Old Blue Horizon in North Philadelphia. We used to go there a lot, and it was Father's Day weekend. And I knew the guy fighting the main event was Harry Joe Yorgi. Harry's a good friend of mine. So we go down to this fight card, and I wanted to get my dad front row seats for this card. So we go to our seat, and first of all, who's sitting in my seat is but Michael Spinks. I'm like, oh, great. I'm not going to tell him to get out of my seat. There was a couple seats closer down, so I went down there, and they were, I think they may have been his seats. So I got better seats anyway, sitting right next to Tex Cobb. And you're right. What a wonderful guy. Sense of humor like you wouldn't believe, smiling, joking with the people. The funny thing was, you know, I had a Sharpie with me. I had a regular pen because I was covering that card, and I had a Sharpie. And so I go, hey, Tex, would you mind signing an autograph for me? Absolutely. And he's got a big Texas smile on his face. And, and I hand him, you know, I undo my Sharpie. I hand him the pen part. And he takes my bout sheet, and he signs it. I actually have it hanging downstairs at my gym. And he signs it for me, keep punching, Randall Tex Cobb. And this guy comes up. Guy, let's just say he had a few too many alcoholic beverages during the fight card. Hey, Tex, will you sign my autograph too? Tex says, sure, absolutely. He looks at me and goes, can I borrow your pen? I said, yes. I have the writing part in my right hand. I have the cap in my left hand. I hold my right hand up. This guy reaches and takes the cap out of my left hand and hands it to Tex. And Tex goes, I can't use it. You won't sign my autograph? He goes, no, you gave me the cap. You know? And I said, Tex, here's the pen. You know, I don't even want to confuse this guy anymore than he already is.
He loves being a comedian. He loves being a comedian. He loves it. He likes to be a joker. And you know, that's his nature, you know. But, yeah, he's a very likable guy. What did they say about him? Boxing's funniest man. This is going back 15, 20 years ago. He's a great MC. MC. I mean, he is a needler. They were roasting him one night, and they made a mistake giving him the microphone. Christ, people were afraid to come up there and try to roast him. He was crucifying them. He's one up on you all the time. He's a hard guy to get on top of. You know what I mean? He's a hard guy to help best in a joking argument or whatever you want to say. You know, in a needling contest, he's going to come out on top.
In anything. What are they going to do? Beat him up? They can't knock Tex out.
Jesus Christ! I've had that conversation with Larry. He said, "Chris," he said. About the 10th, 11th round, he told his corner man, I can't knock this guy out. He said, besides, my hands are killing me from hitting him in the head. He says, my hands are so sore, I can't punch anymore. The guy said, oh, come on, you're ready, he's ready to go. Yeah, well, I'm not, because that's going to be a 15-round fight, you know. So I said to him, he says, Chris, he said, the next morning, somebody handed me candy, and we had a wrap. He said, I couldn't unwrap that. My hands hurt so bad, I couldn't unwrap a piece of candy from hitting Tex in the head. He said, he said, it's depressing. You give a guy your best shot, and then again, and then another one, like three in a row, and he don't even look at you. He said, you don't move him. So they became very, very, very good friends, and like I say, when Tex would grab the mic, he'd steal the show. I'll tell you one guy that wasn't very nice at any time, Sonny Liston.
Oh, yeah.
He was just nasty. Yeah. He wasn't a nice man at all. He was a son of a gun.
Oh.
And his number one sparring partner getting ready for the Ali fight was Jimmy McCarter, who I went to high school with, who played college football at Washington. One of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. I really was impressed. I said, Jimmy, how in the hell do you get shirts to fit you so good? You know, I said, your shirts really look good. I said, I want to go to the same store you go to. He says, my mother makes these by hand. I said, what?
Wow.
He goes, yeah. He says, my mom makes every shirt for me. So I'm a little bit round-shouldered. He said, I don't have straight horizontal, you know, big shoulders. I'm round-shouldered. And I need, and my mom makes every single shirt. And I said, damn, I'd like to have a couple. He says, you don't need them. You got broad shoulders, and you don't need custom-made shirts. I need them. you're the heavyweight champion. You're the national heavyweight champion, Golden Gloves, 3 years in a row. I said, what the hell are you? No, he says, I got to have custom-made shirts. I feel funny because I envy all the guys with broad shoulders, especially all the heavyweights. But he's one of the nicest people I ever met in my life. I played high school football against him. He's just a great guy. But he didn't finish up good. Boxing took its toll on him. The spine and this and that. For some reason, it doesn't affect a lot of people, but it doesn't affect Tex at all. You would think it would. It doesn't affect him at all. But Jimmy just had horrible. I think it was a combination of football and boxing. 4 years of major college football.
Yeah.
You know, and he was a big fullback.
Body trauma.
Oh, yeah, he was a fullback.
Yeah, his body was beat to hell by the time he was 50 years old. He was beat up. I mean, he had about, he was hurting in the knees, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he went to Washington State on a football scholarship. Went to junior college, went to Chester High School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and but he was a tremendous guy. We were friends for years, and then I never saw him again. He moved back out to the West Coast, and he passed away very young, so. You talk about nice guys in boxing. I met a lot of the old-timers that were hysterically funny. The old-timers, I'm going to get back, guys that fought in the 20s and 30s. It seems like the fighters of that era all wanted to be comedians. And they were the funniest people. They were the funniest people in all the sports.
Vaudeville.
Yeah, they were the funniest people in the sports were the boxers and the trainers and the people around the game itself. They were comical. They have your roar. I used to go to the old timers at, the South Philly old timers, the guys that fought in the 20s and 30s. Back when Benny Leonard was around in that era, and they were hysterical. Everybody wanted to be a comedian and have an act, you know. And they were funny. Jesus, they were funny. And there are several books that I have written by guys that were all they did was quote the ring, and the people around the ring, and how many national sayings derived from boxing. You know the term nobody home? You ever hear anybody use that, nobody home?
Yeah.
You know, nobody upstairs, you know what I mean? A corner man who was one of the funniest men in all of boxing, he got about five of them. They still use them today. I still use that. Man, there's nobody home, you know? But they're all likable people. Those guys were hysterical. But, you know, and they had no reason to be or to try. They were happy, and they were happy, and they had brutal times. They look back on their careers. I got a couple of the books that showed this one guy from South Philly was the number one lightweight contender in 1930, and he fought three times a month. And them guys, they were making no money at all. They fought in little gyms, The papers were the judges. The papers told you who was right.
Newspaper decisions.
The papers became in that era, there were no decision contests. You know, no decisions, and they fought often. I said one of them was Lou Massey, a great fighter around South Philly, a top contender too, one or two from the top. He was, Christ! I said, Lou, I checked your record. You fought eight times in 2 months. How the hell did you do it? Your face had to be one big bruise, you know? It wasn't easy. I said, your nose looks pretty good. It looks better than mine. That's a hell of a conversation. So what's going on tonight? Who's fighting tonight? Anybody?
I don't think we got any major fights on tonight, unfortunately.
No, not tonight.
No, we do not.
Not tonight.
So Edner Cherry fought last night. Chris did very well.
You know, I watched that fight. How did it wind up? Did he lose the decision?
No, he got the decision. He got a unanimous decision because he finished strong at the end there.
Yeah, he rallied.
You know, that guy bopped him around pretty good in the early part of the fight, and I thought, uh-oh.
Yes, he did.
He got caught in the back of the head with an overhand right, and I said, uh-oh, this guy's equilibrium was no good for two or three rounds. And then he started coming back, and I said, you know, he can beat this guy. He's hitting him easily. And I said, and then I fall asleep because I had been out all day, you know, and I hadn't had a nap or nothing. I fell asleep about the ninth round. And I wondered, who the hell won that fight? And I turned it back on, but it never came back on. So he won.
Yeah.
That guy was tall, wasn't he? He was a tall guy.
And
he was easy to get inside of, and he was easy to beat to the punch. And I said, said, Cherry can win this fight. And damn, I'm glad he did, because he deserved it. He took some hell of a shots.
Did you see that one preliminary fight with the guy that was 6'6" and 153 pounds?
What? A 6'6" junior middleweight? Jamal Jones or something?
No. He was a European guy. I think he was like Croatian or something like that. Like,
okay.
He's
all body.
Or something like that. And he was 6'6", 153 pounds. And the guy he fought, was tough. Obviously, had a major height and reach disadvantage. But he was bringing the fight. And they actually fought on the inside. And the taller fighter won on the strength of just ripping him with uppercuts till he finally broke.
I didn't see that. Was it on that card?
Michael Knight used to do that.
Yes.
You know, there are some freakishly built guys in the ring. I'm looking at these guys, 6'4", 140. Yeah. What the hell's going on? These guys, I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, how in the hell can this guy be that tall, the arms that long? His bones must be made of canary bones or something. You know, it must be canary. He must have bird bones in there because. Go ahead.
And they fight guys with smaller guys where the size differential is obvious. Right now, I'm gonna relate to you, Dr. Chris. Right now, I'm actually looking at Tony Canzanari fighting Barney Ross. There are two different weight classes. Exactly. There are two different weight classes. But Barney Ross is competing. I mean, it's not as obvious as it is today, and Barney Ross is competing just as equal. Fighters of today don't do that. Especially the big-name fighters. You don't find too many big-name fighters going up and fighting a guy of a heavier weight, of a good class. So, and just the technique that's involved, these guys are tough, and, they know when to be tough and know when to slip punches. Nowadays, it's a lot of acuteness because, and I'm figuring out, obviously I'm getting older and I should have been figuring this out. But I'm figuring out that guys know that they're not that tough. So they have to try to be that more energetic to use their feet to get away. They can't stand in the pocket for that long. I mean, they don't want to learn how to fight in the pocket for that long. You know, inside fighting, aspect almost becoming a lost art.
Yeah. Well, Canzanari was the featherweight champ, and then he was the lightweight champ, and then he fought Ross. Ross was the welterweight champ, and Barney Ross was one hell of a boxer.
Yeah.
And did he win that? What did he win that fight with Ross? I forget.
I don't even know. It's just entertaining. I don't know. You see the size differential, and it's the size differential, but not with that. You see the bigger guy having to employ skill against the smaller guy instead of just, being big enough and dense enough to chuck him over, which you see nowadays.
The last fight I saw of a smaller guy going up and fighting a big guy and it becoming a kind of a battle of attrition regarding skill was Roberto Duran, Marvin Hagler.
Yeah.
And Roberto Duran, if you watch that fight, he put on a master class. And Marvin Hagler, you know, I was just reading a feature in Ring, and he was just saying that, you know, Roberto was so clever the way he timed him with his right over Marvin's jab. Marvin said he couldn't miss him with that right. And Marvin had to adjust in that fight. Those were two equally skilled guys. One was just a little bit bigger.
Well, you know, Duran fought a lot of great fighters, much bigger than his. His knockout of Iran Barkley was sensational.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Barkley was twice his size, and he knocked him the hell out. I couldn't believe it when I was watching it, you know? So. Barney Ross never got the credit he should have got. He was a great boxer, Barney Ross.
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the bigger changes in boxing from then to now is boxing then was a true, and trust me, I am not discrediting anything about boxing now. I mean, I love the sport. I follow the sport. But boxing, you know, back then, being one champion per weight class, things like
that.
Right. You know, it was, you know, you had to fight, guys. If you were doing anything in your career, you had to take the tough fight. Now, it's a business. You know, let's be completely honest. It's a business. And you're like, you know what, if I maybe go this path, avoid this guy because he's stylistically difficult and I can't look good against him, and that hurts my drawing power going forward. Now, I did want to two things I wanted to bring up that I had forgotten to say earlier, both on gentlemen that we spoke of. When we were talking about Mayweather-McGregor and how Mayweather, for the most part of his career, played the villain role, then he became like the hero going into the McGregor fight, defending his sport. I remember saying to my one friend, we were watching the fight together, and I was talking a lot about, okay, here's what a boxer does. Here's how a boxer does this. Okay, he's fighting a southpaw. So you're going to want to move to your left and keep your lead foot on the outside of your opponent's foot.
Yep.
And then Mayweather comes out and moves to his right. And my jaw hit the floor, and I'm like, wait a minute. You are talking about one of the most cerebral fighters ever, one of the best strategists ever, doing something. I'm like, what's going on here?
Counter.
And then, well, what he ended up doing, then it made complete sense to me. McGregor being such a boxing novice, the only thing they would teach him is, okay, you're going to be fighting a conventional fighter. They're going to move this way. They're going to have to do this. So here's how you counter that. You have to stop them from doing this. So what Mayweather do? He did it the opposite way. And McGregor was like, well, you could see his eyes. Like, wait a minute. Now you're going the wrong way. You're supposed to go this way so I can do this. And Mayweather wouldn't give that to him. And that was completely brilliant. The other thing I wanted to say, when we were talking about, you know, fighters and their personalities, and you brought up the name Larry Holmes. And I got to meet Larry at a fight card in Allentown, PA, about 15 years ago. And he was at the end of the night, and you could tell he was tired. He wanted to get out of there, but he was accommodating for photos. I didn't see him again until 2012. And it was the 60th anniversary of the Rocky Marciano knockout of Jersey Joe Walcott. And we all know Larry made the famous comment, you know, when he lost the fight to Spinks, and he took a lot of heat over it. And that day, September 23rd, 2012, I can tell you that forgiveness is a real thing. Because I got to talk to members of Rocky Marciano's family by chance. I was going to Boston for a Red Sox game in 2009. They weren't playing the Phillies. So my dad was suggesting is we should wear some Marciano shirts. Great idea. So I go online, and I'm Googling, and I'm looking around, and I found this really nice one of the knockout punch. But I wasn't sure I'd get it in time. So I placed a phone call. Lo and behold, I got Rocky's nephew on the phone. So now as I'm schmoozing him, Rocky won the title in what city? Philadelphia, PA. And my great uncle was at the fight. The arena down in Philadelphia. And so the program and the ticket had been given to me at one of my fights. And I keep them framed in my basement gym. And so I snap some pictures and I send them to Rocky's nephew, Dennis. So he starts talking to me and we really start BSing a little bit. And he goes, hey, would you like to interview Rocky's friend, Lou Duva? I said, yeah. Like, wow. Is this other guy that Rocky grew up with? I'm like, yeah. So Dennis got me these great interviews, and we're talking, and we became friends. And Dennis goes to me and he goes, hey, would you like to come up for the statue dedication? And he told me the date and all. I'm like, yeah, I would. So my dad and I left, and we left Philadelphia area at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning. We drove straight up to Brockton, Mass., packed a lunch with us, got there.
Wow.
Beautiful day. And they had, I mean, a lot of stars there. They had some New England guys. Vinny Paz was there. I was talking to him. You know, hey, buddy, how you doing? Hey, Vinny, what's going on? Hey, Vinny, this is my dad. Okay. My dad, thinking about it, is wearing a Vinny Paz Dianza T-shirt. So they're buddy now. Had that picture in Ring Magazine. And, you know, Mickey Ward was there. John Ruiz was there. A lot of, you know, influential guys. Don King was there, cracking everybody up, you know, with his 18 flags. And then Larry Holmes was there. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, I can't believe it, you know? And one of the first things, when Larry showed up, Rocky's brother, Peter Marciano, went up to him, and they gave a long embrace, and I got a photo of it, and I was like, wow. And, Larry got up, because they were having all these different people speak, and they were trying to say, keep the speeches to under a minute. You're giving a microphone to Don King and Larry Holmes? That ain't going to happen. Everybody laughed. Larry got up there. He was really good. And so Larry got up there, and he goes, you got to understand something. I said what I said, and he goes, I'm a fighter. We're emotional guys. And, you know, when you train so hard and you fight so hard, sometimes you say things and you regret them. And he goes, and I do. And everybody gave him a standing ovation, and he said, after this event is over, you know, they were having like kind of like a post-fight thing over at the one George's Cafe, which is like a Marciano museum. And he went over there, and I didn't get to go to this, but they said he entertained people for hours singing into a spoon. He had people laughing, and I was like, wow. If you would have ever said Larry Holmes would get a standing ovation in Brockton, Massachusetts, people would have said you're out of your mind. And he did, and I was there, and it was beautiful.
Well, after he made that comment that Marciano couldn't carry his jockstrap, he had just lost the fight, and he wasn't. He was after Marciano's record, and he was furious about that.
Yeah.
And Giardello called him the next day and reamed him out like you can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Joey got on the phone, and I knew Joey very well. I was sparring down at the gym in at Passyunk, brought in Passyunk, 12th and Moore. They had a little upstairs gym up there, and the ring wasn't any more than 10 by 10. You had to fight all 3 minutes. Christ, I was glad to get the hell out of that when that was over. I got the living hell pounded. You know, Joey wore them little gloves like to kill you. You know,
dang.
But anyway, he was furious at Larry. He called him up, and he didn't mix any words, you know. And Larry said, Joe, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I said it out of context. He said, what the hell can I do? He said, all the Italians are going to hate me now, you know. because his lawyer, who kept him straight all his life and made him put his money away, was a paisan. Everybody up there was paisans. Matter of fact, you know, the church that he started, and they were all Italian people, and boy, they all jumped on him. He didn't get away with it. He regretted that statement. He said, Jesus Christ, am I sorry I said that? But he's classic for that. He's classic for that. He's done it to me. Mm. He said things to me and Tex, that we jumped all over him, you know. And he said, well, you know, Tex, he don't mix any words. Holy Christ! If you say something that's offensive, look out. You're going to hear from him in a second. And him and Larry are the best of friends. I mean, they're really good friends. But I would believe that. I would believe he's humble about it now, because he really didn't mean what he said.
Yeah.
You know, you can't knock that era. That era was the era of small heavyweights.
Oh, yeah.
And it's true. Look, how the hell would a guy like Marciano, would he be able to get in the ring with these 6'7" heavyweights?
Well,
he couldn't do it.
Dr. Chris, I have to disagree with you. I'm sorry, disagree with you. Marciano, he was 5'10", at least. I mean, he might not have even been that, but he was around 5'10". Larry Holmes was around 6'3". Marciano fought people around 6'3". He fought Ezra Charles, although on the end of Ezra Charles' career, He fought as a trunk. One thing I do know is this. Ernie Shavers is not a better boxer than Marciano, and he was able to get to Holmes one time. Marciano's going to be able to get to Holmes more than one time, and his armor compared to Holmes' armor, Holmes fought 15-round fights. So in a 15-round fight, I don't think Holmes survives. For the simple fact he's not going to knock Marciano out. Marciano's going to keep coming. And Marciano's been dropped and had to come back from, to deal with fights. Holmes, as well as he can box on the outside, has a tendency to get caught with very, very good hard shots by guys who can kind of get it there. Ernie Shavers, to be honest, he's not the boxer Marciano is. He's not the defensive boxer. He's not the crafty boxer, total boxer Marciano is. Larry Holmes at his peak weighed maybe 10 pounds more than Marciano. What, he might have been 210. Marciano may have been 200. So 10 pounds. Marciano fought heavier. He's going to have to go through things. Definitely things. But give Marciano preparation plans that Holmes will have for a fight. I think he gets Holmes. I honestly do.
Well, you could be right. I'm not arguing. It makes sense. You see, the Holmes to Marciano, that era, there wasn't a big change in the size of the heavyweights. It's now. Now these guys are super heavyweights. I went to a wrestling meet last week. I went to a wrestling meet last week, a high school wrestling meet. This kid that wrestled for super heavyweight for Garner Valley, our local school, and was wrestling, and he worked for me for about 3 years. So I went, he's 275. He gets in the ring, he looks like a midget. This guy, I said to him before the fight, did you see your opponent? He goes, yeah, and he's big. I said, well, who the hell is small is 265?
Yeah.
There are no small people in the super heavyweight. This guy shows up, he's 6'5".
Uh-huh.
Got away 310 pounds. His legs look like telegraph poles. And my buddy's giving him hell. You got to grab his legs. I says, you might as well grab a damn telegraph pole and try to pull it. That guy's just huge. And my buddy keeps giving him hell that he should be doing this, he should be doing that. He's in his corner. And I thought, man, these guys are mine. These are high school kids, 17, 18 years old. So, it's a different era. The food, the diet, like I say, you look at the English heavyweight. He's a big man. Klitschko's a big guy. Klitschko's brother's a big guy. They might have been a little too big for that smaller era heavyweight that I grew up with. In the fighting at 190, 192. I'm not saying one of them guys couldn't nail you and knock you out because Walcott. I'll tell you what I just heard last week from a real close friend. Walcott, he said, what did it feel like getting hit by Marciano late in a fight like that? He said, I'm going to be honest with you. All during that fight, he said, I had control of that fight. He said, Marciano never hurt me at all. He said, that right hand, I don't know where the hell it come from outer space or something, because that wasn't the same right hand I got hit with earlier in a fight. He said, but the guy was relentless, and he caught me in the right position at the right time, and he had them little short arms, and he had giant, strong legs, and he used his legs and arms, and he got it all together, and he said, when he hit me, holy Christ, he said, I was gone. he said, I don't even remember the punch, other than I'm out of here, But Walcott was a powerful man. He was 200 pounds, but he had huge shoulders. He was 5'11", he had big shoulders, big, big, powerful guy. I thought he could have fought, some of the bigger heavyweights, but I just look at these guys today, and I'm like, holy God, are they big? How the hell could that era of heavyweight, that we had, Jack Dempsey was a 6'1", 6'1.5". He was a thin man when he fought Jeff Willard. He was very small.
Yeah.
Willard, Christ,
like 190,
Willard had 60 pounds on him. But I had this argument with Tex, and I said, Tex, they trained different, they ate different, they had different ideas. If you handed a guy a weight in 1935, it would be like handing him poison. He wouldn't lift weights if you, you know, put a gun to his head. Oh, you get muscle bound. You can't touch that. His trainer would never let him touch, you know. They had these old stupid dumbbells in the gym. They were wooden dumbbells they used to throw around and play with. They were weighted. That was about the extent of their weight training. They didn't, you know, like I told Tex, Joe Lewis was 6'1" and a half, and he had a big frame, but he never was allowed to do the exercises that would have made him a big man. I said, but if Joe Lewis had today's diet and training and came in a ring at 225, it would be safe to even be in the same arena with him. I said, he was a big guy. I mean, he'd kill you. Joe Lewis at 225, they didn't, like I say, they didn't have the proper training. They didn't, you know, the word in the 50s was muscle bound. That's all you heard. All you heard. Everybody was muscle bound. He can't fight. He's muscle bound. He lifts weights.
Well, the funny
thing I'm looking at. Go ahead.
Oh, no, no. Keep going, doctors. Oh, no.
Well,
I was just going to say the funny thing is you see the bigger, these guys are bigger. But they're not necessarily tougher, which, you know, I don't think
they're not
you know,
tougher.
I think they're less tougher.
I'll say that. They're not tougher.
They're much more fundamentally flawed. I mean, outside of Klitschko, you see Joshua kind of trying to learn it. But most heavyweights, they get to a certain point, and then they don't want to learn technique anymore. Or they don't seem to pick up technique anymore. They seem to deal with just trying to hit hard, trying to get more power. Not only heavyweights, boxing in general seems to be more, I don't want to say more, you know, it's more generated towards speed and power than it is to technique, where the trainer's going to say, the guy walking in the gym who could explode on the bag, he doesn't have to have the technique, but he has to have that, oh, he has to bag hard and fast. Let's go ahead and put him in the ring. Not necessarily develop his technique as much as develop his strength and his explosiveness. They could develop some technique, but they try to get him more explosive. That's what I'm saying. It's less technique being taught. That's especially fundamental to fighting as much as fundamental to building. Muscle build, not as much muscle building, but just as explosiveness.
Right. Yeah, well, Marciano had an unusual style in the laid back on his right foot. And he avoided the jab. He couldn't out-jab anybody because he only had a 68-inch reach. So he laid back on his right foot so the jab wouldn't hit him in the face. Then he'd come in with this looping right. When he was able to get that off, you had to get the hell out of his way. You had to duck because it was a brutal punch. But it took away his left hook sitting back like that. So they said Marciano had a good – he had a lot of knockouts with his left hook. That was only after he squared up and he caught a guy on the ropes. And then he had a good left hook, but he was so short armed he had to lay back on that right foot, and he was, like you say, a better defensive fighter than you thought, because that's what he did. That's the only way he could avoid that jab. So they figured out ways to beat these bigger guys, and you know, but still, I mean, it's hard to overcome 60, 70 pounds. It's very hard
once
to
you
do
get
that.
To
these guys
once
are
you get to around Lennox. Once you get around Lennox Lewis, that era, after Lennox Lewis, then everybody else seems to be really bigger and a little more skilled. George Foreman, he was an anomaly. In the 70s, in sort of the 80s, he was an anomaly to be that big, that hard-hitting, and that much able to get it there. So, I mean, yeah, boxing has changed, but it hasn't changed for the better necessarily. I mean, I think some of these older guys, they may be smaller, but they have the qualities to beat these bigger guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been interesting to see a few of those fights. You know, certainly the lighter weight divisions, they didn't have to give anything up to these guys. I mean,
exactly.
The welterweights of the era before the war, those guys were unbelievable, the welterweights and middleweights.
Mm-hmm.
And
fight all day.
They were unbelievably good fighters. That hasn't changed. Boxing hasn't changed. For the 160-pounder, it hasn't changed. Those guys in 1927, they weighed 160. The guy weighs 160. Like, what the hell's the difference? You know what I mean? These guys aren't superior boxers to those guys. Those guys were unbelievable. How the hell could a guy like Mickey Walker, 5'7", 160, fight for the heavyweight title? And he was fighting a 210-pound champion, Jack Sharkey, and he went 15 rounds with him. That amazes me when I see that fight. You know, Sam Lankford, little guy, 6'7". He was knocking out all the heavyweights of the. He was knocking out heavyweights that were monsters. So there were some big heavyweights around then. But, you know, Joe Louis, you see the movie On the Waterfront? Oh, yeah, well, that was he was just big, that's all. He was a sorry figure. They got him in Italy. They called him the Ambling Owl. You know, he was 6'6", 267 pounds. That was huge. But he was very muscular and strong. And the only way he could beat you is step on your feet and hit you with an uppercut. You know, and that's how he beat Tommy Loughran. Tommy Loughran fought him for the title. And Primo stepped on his feet and hit him with uppercuts. And that was it. He didn't have any other punch, but he had a hell of an uppercut. Very similar to George Foreman, you know?
So, wow. Dr. Chris,
He was big. Oh, my God, he was big. He was a wrestler after he quit boxing. I saw him wrestle down Atlantic City. He's big.
Dr. Chris, I heard Burt Sugar say that he thought Carnera could compete against Klitschko. Vladimir.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry, my phone.
I watched an interview with Burt Sugar, and he said that he thought Primo could compete with Klitschko. Vladimir.
He could compete with him.
Carnera could compete with Vladimir Klitschko.
I don't know if you're going to win this, but that was awesome strategy.
I don't share Burt Sugar's opinion. He came along out of nowhere. Oh, I never heard of Burt Sugar. All of a sudden, he was a boxing expert. I never heard of the guy in the 40s, 50s. And where the hell did he come from? Burt Sugar, all of a sudden, he smoked a cigar and looked like he was a fight promoter. He's supposed to know something. I don't think he knows anything. Bullshit. He got a lot of bullshit to what he got. Burt Sugar.
Yeah.
But anyway, I shouldn't say that, I guess. But he does have a lot of bullshit.
It sounded crazy to me because I've seen Klitschko and I've seen footage of Primo, and it looked crazy to me. But
now, that would never happen. No. Like Maxie Bear knocked Primo Carnera down 12 times. He didn't want to knock him out. He knocked him down, let him get back on his feet, and then bop him again. He knocked him down. You know, Maxie Bear was 6'3", 210.
Mm-hmm.
He was huge shoulders. He was a hard puncher too. Oh my God! But Primo couldn't hang in there with Klitschko. The hell's wrong with Bert? You know, about change cigars, Bert. Smoke something else.
Change cigars.
Oh, Christ. I never heard of Bert Sugar. Yeah, he wasn't a sports writer. I never heard of him. There were some great boxing writers. Every paper had two or three great boxing writers. The Daily News of New York. They had some of the best. Philly and New York had the best writers. Best writers. But Primo Carnera was a hero. All the little Italian men, you know.
Yeah.
In the neighborhood. Big Primo, you know, they'd all be, he's going to win the fight, and Lewis would knock the crap out of him. I said, if you guys stop rooting for that guy, he can't fight. He should be wrestling. They get mad at me. They want to kick my ass. When I was a kid, I'd argue with the old Italians that Primo was just big. But they were so proud of him, you know what I mean? Because most of those guys came from southern Italy where there wasn't proper diet, and they were all short. And the next thing you know, the first generation, they'd have sons. The sons would be 6 inches taller, 7 inches taller than that first generation that came to this country. But, Primo Carnera was their hero. because the mob prompted him up, you know. And it was an awful era in boxing. It was terrible.
Speaking about Italian fighters, because I always thought one of the best Italian fighters was Nicolino Loce. Saying the name right. Nicolino Loce.
Nicolino.
You remember Nicolino? Loce.
How do you spell that last name?
L-O-O-C-H-A. Loce.
I don't know why.
Yeah, he was a welterweight. He won the championship. He fought from like 58 to 70 something.
I remember the name.
I never got to see him really fight, but I remember the name.
I don't recall that. That's unusual.
I mean, he's one of the best defensive fighters I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think his nickname was Mr. Untouchable. Great defensive fighter at welterweight.
Untouchable.
Well, there were a lot of slick Italian boxers, Johnny Dundee. Johnny Dundee. There were some slick ones, you know. You know, they were like anybody else. Like Willie Pep was the greatest boxer of all time. You know, he might not go down as the best fighter of all time, but he's a great he was classic. He's like Lomachenko. He danced. I mean, he could go through the air without touching the damn ground. I swear, without touching a kick.
He had a great jab.
He was amazing.
Yeah, he had
a
really good jab too. Yeah, I mean, Willie Pep had a good jab, too. Very underrated, but good jab. Great timing.
It's a pretty good offensive fight.
Yeah. What nobody remembers about Willie Pep, he was 68-0, and then he lost to the lightweight champion who had an iron chin.
Yeah.
And then he got into this horrible plane accident, and they told him he'd never walk again. And who the hell do you think his first opponent was after he fought? After the plane accident, he was crushed in a little plane. I got a picture of it. Sandy Sadler. So Willie Pep's career is based on fighting Sandy Sadler. But he fought him after he was severely damaged in a very bad plane accident. He had a little plane he used to fly. And that I never thought that they were fair to him because, you know, they don't remember that he couldn't wait to get back in the ring and fight again, and who the hell they put him up against was Sandy Sadler, who was a tall, good, you know, tall guy for the featherweights and a hell of a puncher. But then after he got beat, he came back and beat Willie beat Sadler in a 15-round contest, outboxed him and actually outpunched him the last three rounds. I was shocked. I saw that fight, but he never got. You know what was doing. He's always judging now on, you know, the fact that he lost to Sadler. But that, you can't judge a man after he's had his body crushed. In those days, they didn't have the medical way to bring you back so fast. I mean, it'd take you forever to heal. The doctors didn't know what the hell they were doing in them days. They didn't even have orthopedic doctors in them days. I hope I can find that picture of Willie Pep. I have it. I had a Ring magazine. It was in a Ring magazine. So, but yeah, he was a phenomenal fighter. He once fought a whole round without throwing a punch, and all the judges gave him the round.
Yep.
Told the judges.
That was one of the things he laughed about. He said, "I went out and I told my corner, I'm not going to throw a punch the whole round," and he made the guy miss the whole round, and they gave him the round on the scorecards. Willie got all the judges. He said, "I never threw a punch." And like I say, Lomachenko has that damn ability. I haven't seen anybody. What is he fighting again, by the way? Who is he fighting? Does anybody hear about it?
Scheduled to fight. Yeah, he's fighting Jorge Linares.
Jorge Linares.
Jorge Linares. So this will be his, on paper at least, his toughest challenge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving up to fight a true craftsman.
I think so too.
think so. I know a lot of people thought Rigondeaux Chance, and I'm like, no, Rigondeaux is too small, and Rigondeaux
wants to win,
and letting the fight be boring. I said he's not going to be able to do that to Lomachenko, and it's not going to be competitive, you know. And lo and behold, it wasn't.
A little too small, too old, too inactive, and it came down to the feet. Like you said, that Cuban style, their feet are a little, you know, I mean, even out of the southpaw style, that's the angle they cut. Lomachenko cuts multi angles. Rigondeaux could never really keep up with his feet placement. So, but Jorge Linares is going to be a little bit longer, a little bit rangier. You know, again, Lomachenko's moving up. And Jorge Linares is a, you know, a very skilled fighter himself. I think he tends to break up a little bit as the fight goes on. But he could pose Lomachenko some looks that he's, you know, hasn't seen quite yet in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jorge Linares has something that could really trouble Lomachenko. That's length and, well, length feet. He's a quick fighter, and he tends to fight at the end of his punches. He's longer than Lomachenko, and he's just maybe, I mean, maybe if he's not as quick, he's around as quick. So, I mean, Lomachenko's not going to find it easy to get to Jorge Linares. Jorge Linares is also not shy of power. He's a pretty hard hitter, even at his weight. Not saying, you know, hitting anybody and knocking them out, but he has very, very legitimate power at his weight. So, I mean, Lomachenko just can't, I mean, he's going to find a lot of that territory to traverse difficult. One thing Lomachenko does have the advantage of is feet. Jorge Linares tends to come in and out, straight in and out.
Yeah.
Where Lomachenko tends to go ahead and deal with angles, circular angles. He can cut the ring off easily on Linares. If he's willing to kind of undergo the contact at times and traverse the territory, he can find some clean punches because Linares is not an acute defensive fighter. So, and as Ty said before, Linares, when that pressure really kind of gets to him, which Lomachenko with his feet could alone provide without even throwing a punch, just being in, you know, Linares' range, just being in this area, he could kind of dictate what happens and even dictate Linares' gas tank because Linares will be throwing punches, you know, kind of get away from me so I can get away. And that could burn him out. So, I mean, a smart game plan, you know, easily, we've got Lomachenko. He has the tools to take care of Linares, but it's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be a very interesting fight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think what's funny, too, and something Zito brought up is that, you know, quicker to the punch, Linares may have quicker hands than Lomachenko. Not sure. Gary Russell definitely had quicker hands than Lomachenko.
Oh, yeah.
I think the thing about Lomachenko, to me, what makes him so special is not necessarily how quick his hands are or feet are, and they're definitely quick, you know, I mean, elite-level, world-class speed. But I think his mind process is so much faster than everyone else, so it gives him more functional speed than anybody. So even though, like, Gary Russell may have quick hands, his whole body's not moving as quickly as Lomachenko's, not as quickly and as precisely as Lomachenko's. I think the way his mind processes allows him to have a functional speed advantage over anybody right now, regardless of how quick their hands or their feet may be.
Right. Oh no! I was just going to say real fast. I think Linares has pretty good mind, you know, as far as the mind reflexes. I think he has pretty good mind reflexes. I just think Lomachenko knows the game. He has a better overall aspect of the game, and he can employ that more. Go ahead, Dr. Chris. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Now, I was going to say, Lomachenko puts himself into the right positions all the time. He's never out of position.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, well, how the hell does he know where the hell to go? You know, so he's always got the advantage on you. He amazes me. I tell you, I just am amazed at the guy. And I'd like to see him fight somebody really, really good like that just to see how good he is, you know? He reminds me so much of the little guy from Virginia Beach area. You know what I'm talking about,
Frankie.
The little left hand.
Frankie.
Pernell Whitaker. Yeah, he's like Pernell Whitaker.
Pernell Whitaker
could fight guys way bigger than him, way better. And he'd always be in a better position than them to pop him. And I used to love to watch Pernell Whitaker. I mean, he was never out of position. He would dip, move, but he knew that, you know, when a guy got near him, he was always in a better position than the other guy. I'll tell you, there's a guy coming up now who reminds me so much of Pernell Whitaker. He just fought not too long ago. He knocked that big, tall, 6 foot, I think 2 or 6 foot 3, 140 pounder out. You know who I'm talking about?
5 minutes.
Are you talking about Crawford?
About 2 months ago, he had a knockout where the guy had to be Long Dongo or something or a name like that. The guy he fought.
Crawford. You're talking about Terrence Crawford?
Yeah. That guy had 6 or 7 inches in height on him. He looked like an elementary student against a college guy. You know what I mean? And then he knocked the hell out of him.
One thing about you talking about Terrence Crawford?
No, that it wasn't Terrence Crawford.
You're talking about Regis Progray.
Yeah,
you're talking about Regis Progray, the guy Regis Progray, yes.
What a prospect that guy is.
Yeah, Regis looks good. He reminds you of an old school fighter in the way he moves forward and his punch technique.
Yeah,
I like Regis.
Yeah, he's a great fighter. I haven't seen him since that fight. He knocked that guy had to have 6 or 7 inches in height to him. It looked comical when he stood next to each other. What the hell? If this guy's any kind of a boxer, he's going to be able to stay away from this guy and outbox him. He was gone after about 4 rounds. he got knocked the hell out. But Progress, that's it. That's it. That's the guy. Look out for him. Anybody know when he's fighting again?
Not sure, but I believe one of the sanctioning bodies has mandated a fight between he and, I believe it's Jose Ramirez, the gentleman who just defeated Amir Imam for the title. So supposedly that's the sanctioning body has set that up. I believe there's a possibility they could take a fight in the interim, but there's also a possibility that fight could come to fruition very soon.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him fight again. Yeah. Hey, what the hell, Frank?
Guys,
sleeping in a corner over there somewhere?
No, I'm just listening to everybody.
What time does the show end? Midnight?
The
show ends at midnight tonight, Frank.
You guys get your money's worth. That's right.
Yeah.
Wake him up, would you? Zeta, wake him the hell up, would you?
No, we've been going. I mean,
we're in a 15th round here, Frank. I'm running out of gas.
I told Fortuny he's only going to be on for 15 minutes, and here we are an hour and a half later.
That's all right.
Oh, wow. Dr. Chris's fault. We got to blame you, Dr. Chris. I'm sorry.
Well, guys, we are up against our time limit, and we have to cut it short here. So
it's only midnight,
shows,
Frank.
We've had. Yeah.
Take a nap before
absolutely
the show next
sorry,
time, would you? Get a nap. Hey, guys, I got to go eat before I faint. All right?
Absolutely. Take it easy.
I'll see you guys next
week.
All right, guys. Good talking to you.
Okay,
enjoy it. All right. See you next week.
Darren, we thank you for coming in with us tonight. If you ever get a chance and you want to come back on, we're on from he's already dropped. Okay. Z, you want to lead us out?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a pleasure, a wonderful show. Sorry we ran late. Tony, no please come back. It's been a pleasure. Dr. Chris, always a pleasure. I want to thank Butch, Ty, all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Ty?
Butch, Zito, Dr. Chris, Brady, always a pleasure. Tony, thank you for coming in and joining us. Bob is our co-pilot. Everyone, enjoy their week.
I want to thank everybody for coming in. Ty and Zito always hold the program to the highest of quality. Dr. Chris always adds the levity and the historian value. Actually, Brady was the one who found Tony for us. So we want to thank him for that. And I want to thank Tony Tornado for coming in. It's always a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. A wink, a handshake, or just simply saying, be safe, my brother, my sister. These are very difficult times, both domestically and foreign, for our men and women in uniform. We also want to remind everybody to just keep a good thought and say a prayer if you're for a good family friend who is going to be going to Cleveland Clinic to have some additional tests in the very near future. So these programs are dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Special Inspector FDLE, Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Mac Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, and Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, we may be 10-7 at this point in time. At some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face, and the winds fall softly on your face, and the rains fall softly on your fields. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night, and God bless, and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yilama. Who's
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.